This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap. It's John Gibbons hosting this week, and I'm joined by Harriet Pryor, by Ian Ryan, and by Stu Wright to talk about everything that's going on in the world of Liverpool Football Club over the weekend. We're going to talk about pre-season so far. Liverpool have played three games, I guess you would count. Cast them as two of them were only half an hour each, but then a 90-minute one on Friday. So it'll be interesting to get the thoughts of the panel on what they've seen so far. But before all that, we're going to get into the breaking news over the weekend, which was some comments from Gini Wijnaldum. So first of all, hello everyone. I'm just conscious I'm going to read now for a lot, so say hiya. Yeah, I just wanted to start with the quotes because a lot of people have jumped in feet first or head first or whatever you want to say into them. So I think it's worth, first of all, hearing from Gini in his own words. I've also seen it reported quite a lot as an interview. I think the Times managed to claim it as an exclusive, which was interesting. It was actually quotes taken from his PSG unveiling press conference. It was a Zoom press conference that quite a few journalists were present at, where Gini Wijnaldum was there primarily to talk about joining PSG, but was obviously asked about the stuff around Liverpool and spoke about it. But I think that context is important because I think the suggestion was that this was sort of a big interview where he was finally going to discuss what went on, and it wasn't really that. And I think that context, as I say, is important. But anyway, I'll get onto the quotes. There was a moment when I didn't feel loved and appreciated. This is Gini, not me, by the way. I'm always appreciated.
Works for both, doesn't it?
There was a moment where I didn't feel loved and appreciated. Not my teammates, not the people at Melwood. From them, I know I can say they all love me and I love them. It was not from their side, more the other side. He was asked a little bit more about that, and he said, not towards the end, also before that. Basically, in the last two seasons, I had it a few times. The media didn't help. I put that in, by the way, because loads of the media took that out, which is really funny. So that was not reported in The Guardian, but he definitely said it. The media didn't help. There was a story that Liverpool made an offer I didn't accept because I wanted more money, and the fans made it like, okay, he didn't get the offer, so he doesn't try his best to win games. Then the results were not really good, and everything looked like it was against me. Some moments, it was like, wow, me again. It's a collective, but my teammates never gave me that feeling that I let them down or I was taking the piss or something like that. With the team, everything was fine. And then he goes on to say, I have to say also, and that also is important, I feel, there was social media. When it went bad, I was the player who they blamed that I wanted to leave. Every day in training and in the games, I gave everything I had to bring it to a good end, because during the years, Liverpool meant so much to me, and because the fans in the stadium were treating me. My feeling was that the fans in the stadium and the fans on social media were two different kinds. The fans in the stadium always supported me, even when they came back already knowing that I was going to leave. They still supported me, and in the end, they gave me a great farewell. On social media, if we lost, I was the one who got the blame. There was a moment when I was like, wow, if they only knew what I was doing to stay fit and play every game, other players might have said, okay, I'm not fit. You get players in the last year who are like, I'm not playing because it's a risk. I did the opposite. I didn't always play good after the game. I could look in the mirror and say, I gave it all. I trained hard to get better. Even with the physios, I took the most possible treatments I could get. I can't remember when I had a day off because I played so many games and basically it was too much for the body, but I did everything to stay fit. So there's a lot to unpack there. I'll start with you, Stu. What did you make of the comments? What did you make of the reaction? And what did you make of it all?
Absolutely fine with the comments. No problem with it at all, because although it might not sit comfortably, we've got to be careful here as a fan base. We can be a bit oversensitive to anyone saying anything that can be considered a negative, even though we know it's true. So as a, you know, we've sat around and slaughtered aspects of our fan base over the years on social media. You know, we can't deny that there is an element on social media that is not just of our fan base, yeah, of everyone's. That is appalling in how it behaves and how it acts towards our players and players of other clubs. We've seen it recently with England as well, with the penalty takers. So we can't deny, we can't bury our head in the sand that this is happening. I actually thought it was quite refreshing for an articulate player to put it across very, very clearly, separate the issue between the fans in the ground and aspects on social media. he called out the media, as you said, John, and you know, I think that's fair game. But I actually found it quite refreshing. I also found it quite ironic that the majority of the people on social media who have complained about his views are most, in most cases, similar people to were slaughtering him in the first place. To me, Gini Wijnaldum was a top professional for Liverpool. I'm not saying he was, you know, 10 out of 10 every game, but he was a player that looked after himself. He got on well with the other players. He always put himself out there. He was a leadership role. He was one of the captains voted by the players to be, what was it, the fourth captain?
Yep.
So that shows you the respect he had in the dressing room. He was the consummate professional when we were going through absolute hell last year with injuries. He was a constant. I mean, he makes reference there to the point that there were times when he was struggling. You know, he was knackered. He was absolutely knackered come January, February. But he was still getting picked every week. He wasn't complaining. He was playing through injury because he knew there was a job to be done for the team, even though he knew he was going, and that's a risk in itself. You know, he played through all that. So for me, I think, you know, it's a fair observation that he's made, and I would like to see more players making that observation as well, you know, being clear, making that separation between the exact elements of the fan base who are doing it. But I'd like to see more players across, you know, different clubs stating their case, because we all know it's about time that there were greater rules and regulations around social media and what you can put on. So it's not for me to say that he's been oversensitive or anything like that. And I've seen a few people have said that. Even Jamie Carragher potentially has hinted at that, really. It's not for me to say. I don't walk in Gini Wijnaldum's shoes. And I don't, you know, if he's typing his name into social media after a game, or he's seen his notifications, his mentions, okay, you might say to him, well, just turn your phone off. But, you know, it's the 21st century. It doesn't work like that. As a young fella, he's going to be aware of it. So we've got no right, I don't think, to judge how he feels as a human being when he's getting abuse on social media like that. So for me, no problem with it. He's an absolute legend. It doesn't besmirch my view of him at all. And, you know, good luck to him at PSG, except when he's playing Liverpool.
Do you think part of the problem with the sort of reaction it got, Harriet, was that we've all been sort of waiting to hear from Gini? He was a bit cryptic after the last game of the season, where he said, oh, you know, there's reasons. It was kind of like, oh, well, all will be revealed later on. I don't really want to talk now, and eventually I'll tell the fans what happened. And so we were all like waiting around for the gossip almost, you know what I mean? And then it was like, well, I didn't think he'd blame us. Do you know what I mean? I think the sort of the first thing he said was a bit sort of perceived, obviously, to be sort of negative as the fans. Do you think that was part of the issue, that, as I say, that people were maybe waiting for this kind of, as big, like, you know, oh, FSG did this or FSG did that, really? And then the first comments, you know, they were kind of presented with were negative about an aspect of the fan base.
Yeah, obviously it was very cryptic when it first came out, and at the end of his match, you know, his final appearance for us, he was saying everything will be revealed, the truth will be revealed. I think at the time he didn't want to ruin the amazing response he actually got in the stadium, and that, we have to remember, that was the first time actually fans had been back for a while, and he hadn't sort of gauged the temperature amongst match-going fans, and they are a very different breed of fans to those you see on social media that maybe actually don't go to the match and don't support the team through thick and thin. I think that's really important to remember. I mean, you know, it's difficult, because for me, he was in no way saying that is the reason he left. He was quite clear that it was, you know, a contractual situation. It was a situation with FSG that they couldn't agree the terms. I don't think he was saying social media and fans and the abuse that I was getting on social media was the reason I left. I think he was just saying that contributed to the negative sort of feeling that he had and the vibe in the club and the idea that he perhaps wasn't wanted. And like he said, that did not come from the people within the club. That didn't come from Klopp. We all know how much the manager thinks of him. And it didn't come, I think it's fair to say, from the majority of the fans, and everyone sitting in this room knows how much, you know, Wijnaldum did for the club and how much he means, and including me. I think he's an absolute legend and will always be remembered like that. But it is a shame that this is the first sort of reflection that he's had in his time at Liverpool, that it is negative. But I don't think that's for us fans who wouldn't abuse him on social media to say, okay, you can't dilute his experiences. That's what he had and that's what he was coming across. And for him to say, you know, to say that actually contributed to a negative mindset, we need to take that really seriously. And I think for far too long, not just footballers but celebrities, everything have been told, oh, you know, just drown it out, turn it off. But you can't, it's really hard to drown out external noise. And I think, like, when Klopp first came in, he was saying, you know, the whole doubters to believers things, the team didn't believe in themselves, and that's because of some of the abuse they were getting on social media. So for Gini to come out and say, look, I've had a tough time, people have been giving me abuse online, I think we need to listen to him and believe him. And Mel Reddy's done a really good piece this morning in The Independent, and I would urge everyone to read that, just saying we need to listen to these players and listen to what they said, especially after the year we've had. We know that they're just humans. Footballers aren't exempt from feeling what normal humans do. And if they're getting stuff online telling them essentially that they're not good at their job and they're not respected, they're going to take that to heart. And the fact that he played the way he did throughout all of that going on in the background is just testament to him and his professionalism and the kind of character and the player that he is. And I think, you know, it will sort of be the first of many players coming out and saying we've had a tough time and more needs to be done and more does need to be done to stop this.
What do you make of it all, Ian?
I have to say, John, when I saw the headline on Saturday night, I think I made a mistake of just going off the headline, to be honest. And I kind of honed in on, you know, the reasons that I thought he wanted to leave the club, which was about, you know, the money and the length of contract and stuff. And I put something out there along those lines as well. And then one or two people quickly came back to me and said, well, you've glossed over the point he's raising here, which is a really important one. And they were right. And, you know, in hindsight, I kind of went back to those people that night and said, I've worded up poorly, to be honest with you, because he was raising a really, really good point. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget, you know, just because some of these players are paid handsomely, that you think they can just, you know, forget about any abuse they may get online. And we know the reasons why he wanted to move on. And we know that, you know, FSG weren't prepared to kind of budge on the contract or the money. And he's probably well within his rights to be asking for a bit more, because we know, you know, compared to one or two others, he probably wasn't getting what he felt he was worth. But he drops a little reminder in there that as a collective, we can all be better and we should be better. Mm. And I think it's, you know, Stu's mentioned about what happened in the summer. It was appalling. It was. You can't use another word for it. And as Stu mentioned, no one's got a right to say how someone should feel about the abuse they've seen online about themselves. And you know, the Carragher thing got mentioned there, and you know, Jamie said you could just turn it off, or, you know, you don't have to look at it. And maybe that's how he'd deal with it. Mm. He probably would. And maybe one or two people could deal with it that way. And that's fine, because everyone's different. And that's what you have to remember here. Everyone is different. And how one person handles something like that is completely different to how someone else would handle it. And I think you've got to respect Jeannie for coming out and saying it. And again, just reminding people, listen, have a little think about what you're doing on social media. Your first thought should not be, after someone's played poorly, to get online or whatever's happened. Your first thought should never be to get online and abuse someone. It just shouldn't be the case. And, you know, even when we do, and you can't make a direct comparison because we are so far removed from a footballer's world, but even when you do things like this, Gibbo, you know, you do the Anfield Rap, you do enough shows, and, you know, you're out there on the internet, aren't you, essentially? And you can sometimes see things out there that you think, that's crossed the line a little bit. And I've done it myself, where, you know, you'll see nice things said about you, then you'll see some bad things said where not everyone agrees with what you say, and that's absolutely fine. You know, I've never come on one of these shows and thought, I'm speaking for the fan base, I'm speaking for me. I've got my own opinion on everything. The players, the ownership, everything is my opinion. But then you see one or two things, you think, that's crossed the line, you know. You don't need to get personal with it. You don't need to abuse people. You can disagree. You can have debate. You can even argue a little bit, but it doesn't have to get personal. It should not cross the line. And I think, you know, Jeannie made the point about the love he felt inside the stadium versus the online stuff. And that's not to say everyone online is digging them out, because that's not the case. It is a man.
Well, not everyone can be in the stadium.
Absolutely not everyone can be in the stadium. But I think if you are in the stadium, if you have been in the stadium in recent times, and we know it's been a while, Gini Wijnaldum was loved by most people. Certainly around me and the cop, name got sung all the time. People understood his role. People could see what he was offering to the team. He's been a great player for this club, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. The manager loved him. I don't know what the numbers are, but I doubt he's missed more than 10 or 12 games in the time he's been there. And someone will probably be able to tell me what the numbers are. That shows you his commitment and his dedication to this team. As you said, there was times when Liverpool needed him. They absolutely needed him, because we were running on empty and he made himself available when others might not have done that. Because we know what it's like. Footballers are very rarely fully fit. You've got to put your body on the line a lot of the time, and he was prepared to do that for this club. So I'll always have a special place kind of in my heart for Gini Wijnaldum. I think he's been nothing short of superb for the club. And as I say, it was sad to see that he felt he had to raise that on his way out the door.
Do you think, you know, part of the problem, Stu, is the fact that, you know, he hasn't had many fans in grounds, and so that's the balance, and so that's where, you know, I agree with the, you know, the idea of, oh, just ignore them is difficult, because that's the only interaction with supporters these players are getting at the moment. So what they have been getting, they've been playing in by and large empty grounds, do you know what I mean? And your natural instinct, you know, if you're playing for the shirt and you're playing for the supporter base, is it interesting how you think they're getting on? And if he feels like he's getting blamed, you know, for things, or if he's getting picked on when it's not, then it is going to get to him, really. And so I wonder whether, you know, and I thought a lot about this. I thought this would, when the Nico Williams was getting terrible dogs abuse, and obviously his family have talked about that recently, and it's really sad, and but I thought, you know, I just wish you know, we were there in the ground to show him that we're not all like that, or there are people who have sort of got us back, really. None of these lads have had that, really. The online interaction's all they've known, so just sort of switching that off, you know, is difficult.
I'm smiling because it's such a good point. It's so relevant to the issue, and I never even thought about it at all. To be honest with you, you know, I just didn't join the dots on that one. The fact that yeah, you know, he does make the separation between in-ground and social media, but he's had no one in the ground.
Yeah.
So as you say, his only interaction with fans, and if you are a player who wants to interact with fans, if their engagement,
that's how
support,
we built the whole thing as well, exactly, Stu.
If that support is important to you as an individual, then, I mean, my God, if you're going on there and all you're seeing is largely abuse, then, you know, the effect it's going to have is huge. And, you know, I'm not saying anything negative about Jamie Carragher here, because he's just given his view as well. But I think there's an interesting commentary on this, because Jamie Carragher is a very, very specific personality type, quite rare, incredibly strong-minded. He admits that himself. You look at the progress of his career, talk about someone who got the best out of everything he had. I mean, a very, very special mentality that Jamie Carragher has, but also one that is aligned to the generation before this one. Mm-hmm. A lot has happened in the years. What is it? Something like, what, 7-8 years now since Carragher's retired? I think it was 2013, wasn't it? You know, a lot has changed, you know, in that time. And Carragher himself talks about how he doesn't think he would have the tools to make it as a manager, because he would struggle to relate with the players and to be calm with them and give them the kind of man management that they need in this day and age. And I think, you know, you can almost draw a line to that view, to this maybe, and just maybe not quite getting how reliant this current generation of players are on that fan engagement on social media. And it took Carragher a long time to get onto social media in the first place. So I think the fact that Carragher's got his viewpoint of how Genie should have dealt with this is fine. That's his view, as long as he doesn't portray the fact that everyone should behave like that and be able to be mentally as strong as that, or to, you know, have their characteristic makeup to be that way. As Ian said before, everyone is different, and you know, we, more than ever over the last 18 months during the pandemic, there seems to be a rightly increased profile on mental health. Mm. And it would be daft of us to think that doesn't enter into elite sport at the highest level. If anything, regardless of how much you're getting paid, mental health issues are likely to be more acute because you're constantly walking on across the cliff edge of performance and pressure. And I think, you know, all of that awareness around mental health will continue to be undermined while social media has the freedom that it continues to have.
It's not the reason he left Harriet, as we've all sort of said. And if he'd got the contract that he felt he deserved, or the terms that he felt he deserved, then, you know, he'd still be here now. But I think, So in a way, I'm sort of, you know, a part of me is, you know, almost frustrated, if that's not the word, that these two things have come up at the same time and they've been sort of grouped together. But the more I sort of think about it, the more I understand why he's done that, because he's talking about, you know, some low moments for him and sort of feeling valued. And he mentions the other side, which is a very interesting term. And we assume that he's talking about ownership, or talking about, you know, he's talking about the people who fundamentally make the decisions on what length his contract's going to be, which doesn't appear to be Jurgen Klopp, which is maybe one for another day, I suppose. But, you know, he's already feeling you know, he's not being properly valued. And at those times when you're looking above you and thinking, well, I'm doing all this and I'm not, you know, getting the love, then doubt can sort of creep in. And then that's where, you know, a lack of support from you know, a fan base can make it worse, I guess. And I'm picturing someone here who's, you know, who's, as I say, he's looking at, you know, owners who won't give him a new deal. You know, he's looking around and seeing everyone else get new contracts, it seems, and not him. And then he's going on his Instagram, maybe for a bit of love, which we've, you know, I'm sure lots of people have done in the past, you know, even if it's just a sort of little pick me up or whatever. And you know, he's getting sort of abuse there. You could see why the two, you know, did start to get linked really for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think from a sort of outside perspective, the two being conflated at the start might be a little bit confusing, because you think, how is his contract situation being linked with his abuse on social media? But actually, when you dig a bit deeper into it, I think he was just trying to say that this all contributed to the fact that he just didn't feel very valued, because the ownership weren't willing to barge on any sort of negotiation, and they didn't want to, they didn't, you know, they were saying basically because of his age, he wasn't getting a new contract. But then, like you said, players around him are getting a new contract, so he might not have been fully believing that sort of dynamic that was coming from them. And then, like you said, you're going on social media and you're seeing all of this. And I just think he must have thought, the ownership don't want me, the fans don't want me. And like you said earlier, that's the only interaction he was having with fans. And the only people that want me around are my teammates, but they don't really have much say in the situation. So, yeah, for him, it must have all just contributed to this whole feeling that he just didn't feel like he was wanted at Liverpool, which we all know is completely not the case. I think social media adds a really interesting dynamic for fans, because we can now follow along their lives, basically. We can have such a unique insight that you didn't used to get into everything that they're doing, their thought process, their mindset. And Gini Wijnaldum is very, very active on social media, it must be said as well. Like, after every match, he was posting paragraphs on Instagram sort of saying why he thought the game didn't go well more than any of the other players when they sort of disappeared during the downward spiral that we had last season. And for us then to turn around and want all that and want all the insight and want to get to know these players and then say, oh, actually, but when you're saying you don't like something about it, we're not going to accept that. That's unacceptable from a fan perspective, because if we want all of that and everything that we're getting, then we have to accept that actually when they're not happy about it, we need to listen to them as well. So I think it, yeah, like you said, from a starting point, it does seem a bit strange that they were dealt with in the same interview. But I think he just wanted to get everything off his chest. He might not have planned to actually all of this to come out in one interview, but once he started talking, he must have just said, oh, I didn't feel valued by the ownership, and then it didn't help that all the fans were coming in, and then he just sort of treated it as a bit of a therapy session, this interview, it seems like. But yeah, I don't know, I just feel sad, because I don't want him to have any sort of sense that he wasn't valued, because he absolutely was by the majority of fans. And it's sad that this small minority on social media has such a large voice, and I don't know the way forward, how we make this small minority on social media not have as much of a you know, prominent voice, and what is the way forward for that?
Can I just say as well, yeah, John, you know, just despite all the things that we've discussed and those negative emotions he might feel about being valued, whether it be by aspects on social media, whether it's by internal forces at the club who make the decisions, despite those things, he still wanted to stay.
Yeah.
Liverpool would have been his first choice. I don't think Liverpool would have had to have offered him the contract that PSG have done.
No.
You know, I think he just wanted a reasonable contract that stressed his value to the club over the previous 5 years and what he could be going forward. And, you know, we'd waited a long time for his contract to be renewed and bumped up, and it never came, and he saw players constantly around him have that happen. He sacrificed himself as well in terms of how he plays tactically for the team. So despite all those issues, he still wanted to stay.
Yeah.
Liverpool weren't forthcoming in what a contract that he would think was reasonable. So he's had to move. He's had to move his family. They've had to leave their home. They've had to move to a fresh country. That all might be very exciting as well, but at the same time, there's going to be a tinge of sadness there, at least. So it's no surprise, really, that you know, he's poured out his emotions a little bit. I think fair play to him. No problem with it.
Yeah. And not only did he want to stay, but even when he knew he was leaving, he gave his all in every single match, literally until the last whistle was blown on that Crystal Palace match. He wanted to be there and he gave his all. And I think for anyone to even suggest that he sort of was blamed for the bad performances that we had, they've never watched him play football properly, in my opinion.
It's the point here as well that he makes, that he was like, well, I was always there, and he's not pointing fingers at others, but we know footballers do it, because they've said when they retired, you know, talked about, you know, there's lads who'll who'll play. There's lads who'll play through the pain, and then there's others who won't. And I think it's a decent point, isn't it? And it's hard because, you know, you don't want to sort of, you know, go too far the other side, because, you know, then you just join in with the kind of thing that Jeannie was talking about earlier. But, you know, instead we should really be valuing these boys who, you know, because injuries is a bit of luck, but also it's what you're willing to do. And it's very clear that the Jeannie Wijnaldum was someone who was willing to do a lot to sort of, you know, to stay on the pitch for Liverpool, to do his bit. He wanted to be sort of out there, and that could be something that maybe isn't valued enough as from supporters.
Possibly. I mean, I think I alluded to before, you know, when it's coming towards the end of last season and Jeannie knows he's not staying, you know, there would have been a number of people who would have thought, well, I've got to look after myself here,
yeah,
because I've got to get a move, and if I suddenly break my leg or do my cruciate, well, PSG don't want me, Barcelona don't want me. So he has got to wrestle with that a little bit, what he does. But I never doubted him for a second, John, to be honest, because I think what you've learnt over the last 5 years is that he's of a mentality where he is very much about the collective and not about himself as an individual. You know, look how he plays for Holland, for instance, compared to how he plays Liverpool. Now, I'm not suggesting he favours one or the other, to be honest, but I know which one I'd rather be doing. I'd rather be scoring the goals and getting the glory. But for Liverpool, he sacrifices himself and he plays a totally different way, to the point where he'll face criticism because of that, because you don't see the same output. But he's doing something the manager's asking him to do. And that's his role, and that's been his role over 5 years. And obviously, he's played in different positions. He's even done a little bit of false nine for us when we've had to ask him. He's done something at centre half. So he is a player who's willing to kind of, you know, for the greater cause, put himself in difficult situations. And I'm sad to see Wijnaldum go. I can kind of understand it to an extent, because I think a lot of players are coming to an age where you've got to try and evolve the squad a little bit. So the key here is, well, what's next? What comes through the door? Because I'd hate to see a Jeannie Wijnaldum go and no one else to come in, because I think we need someone.
Mm.
So that's important. You know, your point about other players maybe putting the bodies on the line. I mean, I think all around the table, we'd all have loved Daniel Sturridge during his time at the club. But there was one or two things that other players said, other senior pros that said, at times, could he have done a little bit more with his body? Could he have pushed himself through the pain barrier? I don't know. Daniel will know, because yeah, it's his body. So maybe it's unfair to make assumptions, but you can only go off what other players have said. And I think they've said it in various sorts of biographies, where they've said, well, you know, were there times where he maybe just could go through that barrier? Suarez did it. I think there's a narrative around Suarez. He was probably never fully fit because of all the knocks he took. No fucking chance he was pulling out of football matches. He'd have had to drag him off the pitch. So that's elite mentality for you. And sometimes, you know, you don't know what's going on with a player's body, and they've got a responsibility to their own body to make sure they're looking after themselves. But as I say, I never got a sense from Jeannie Wijnaldum that he wasn't prepared to put himself on the line. And that's a testament to him. And as I say, he'll be a miss. And, you know, he could go on and achieve great things at Paris Saint-Germain. You maybe look at it and go, well, we should have kept him. That can happen sometimes, though. You know, even the best can get decisions wrong. You know, you look at people like Alex Ferguson at United, where he'll get some right, and he shifted out some big name players, you know, Mark Hughes, Kinchelskis, Paul Ince. Go back further, Strachan, Whiteside, and Paul McGrath, people like that, people who were legends at the club. He'll get one wrong now and again. Yapstam, he knows he got that wrong. He was looking at the numbers and thinking maybe he's just slipped a little bit, but he was just playing a different game. Yapstam, he was reading things better. So you can't get these things wrong. You can't let players go and they come back and bite you on the arse a little bit. For me, the key is the squad has got to keep evolving. And if Jeannie had still been there next season, I'd be absolutely fine with that, because he's a great player and he can't have too many great players. But I think there is something around, they can't all get old at the same time. You've got to maybe shift one or two at different times. You've got to maybe take that gamble a little bit. But the key is bringing new players in through the door and letting them evolve and letting them take over the mantle and stuff. And that's why I'm really interested to see what Liverpool do next in the market.
We shall see. What can we do next as supporters, Stu? That's the sort of question, you know, because, you know, you can't ban people from social media for just being negative. And so abusive language or anything sort of, you know, racist or homophobic or anything like that is rightly, you know, being talked of as we should be zero tolerance on this. But you know, negative people just moaning at footballers after the games, you know, is not going to suddenly sort of, you know, be cracked down on. So I don't know. I don't know what, you know, I'm not expecting you to sort of have all the answers here.
Thank God for that.
But I don't know, maybe the Anfield Rap have got a duty to sort of speak out on it. And I think for all of us, whether we're in the ground or not, I think it's just a reminder of what is our job. Do you know what I mean? What are we there to do? Are we not there to help these players play as well as we can? Isn't that a supporter's role? And I think that's where it's interesting. Jeannie makes the distinction, because, you know, I'm not going to, you know, we're all match going fans, so you've got to be a little bit careful here to say, oh, we're the good ones and the others are bad. You know, it's not as simple as that. We all know people in the ground who moan a lot, and we all know people who would give the right arm to be in the ground every week and can't, but support the team in exactly the correct way from wherever they are. So I don't think it's a black and white issue, but at the same time, I think maybe people who have been going more regularly over the years sort of understand what they're there to do, and they've seen their power in a positive way, and they've maybe experienced their power in a negative way as well, which has happened in the ground, and we've all had to sort of hold our hands up when we've been too edgy or whatever, or there's been instances in the past where, you know, players have been unfair, and I think you sort of learn from that, really. I think for a small number of fans online, there seems to be, you know, this kind of anger that when things aren't going better, that how can you do this to me? Do you know what I mean? I'm supporting this team. I could be supporting anyone. I'm supporting yous, and yous are letting me down. And it's this kind of personal thing. And I don't know. I think we just all need to remember what it is a supporter is meant to do, and that's to get the most out of their players. And you get the most out of people by supporting them, surely.
Yeah, remember that, you know, as we've said before, it's a leisure activity. You know, it's meant to be fun. It's meant to be something that you pass the time for pleasure, for enjoyment. Obviously, you know, defeat never feels good. Fortunately, you know, we support the team in the city. You don't have to suffer that as much as some others. But, you know, when it does come, it's acute. But it's difficult. It is very difficult, because I'm reminded of, Kev was on a show, I think, last week, and he actually made reference to something you did, John.
Christ.
and he was being very kind, actually. I'm sure it was Kev, but it was definitely about you, because he was talking about a situation where I think you were away somewhere and you'd overheard a fan saying something very, very negative.
It was Robbo who said it.
It was Robbo. Yeah. There we go. And you, unlike most people who just walked past and kept their mouth shut, you actually stepped in and said, you know, a bit out of order that, mate, or whatever it was you said. But you felt it right to challenge that view. I think it's a dangerous game, that, isn't it? Because what we don't want to end up is with bloody fights happening all over the ground and whatever, you know, between our own fans. But I think, you know, when it comes to social media, it's not going to break out into a fight. You know, it's keyboard warriors at best. And I do wonder whether there should be an element of us not calling people out for giving a fair critique of a game or of a performance, but when people go over the line, maybe there is a place for them to be challenged. Maybe it is right. Because I think we've opened Pandora's box. That's the problem with social media. Because even, as you said before, if rules come in, which, you know, are long overdue around whether it be sexist, whether it be homophobic, whether it be racial, you know, a variety of forms of abuse that go on there, that would be brilliant. That would improve the situation dramatically if we have to put our ID in there, and there's various ways that you can address it. But you can't really address it for just people being negative. You can't really, just if someone's just making a negative comment or giving a performance critique or having a moan, it's difficult, really, isn't it, to challenge them too much on it, because it's their viewpoint, it's their opinion, and that's really what social media has become. It's become a platform to put your opinion across. So I don't know. I feel like I'm certainly not the man with the answers. I'm certainly not the man who has a clue, really, how to go forward with it for that kind of thing. But I think it's just, you know, it's a human issue. It's a humanity issue. We all have that side of us. We all have the need to vent, to get emotions off our chest. And for some people, the only vehicle or the best vehicle for them to be heard is through social media. So I really don't know, because you can't change social mindset like that. Do you know what I mean? You just can't do it. So I don't know. But maybe when people do cross the line, I think if more, you know, had the Gibbons spirit of feeling free to challenge, feel comfortable to do that, maybe that wouldn't be a bad thing.
There is a Gibbon Spirit now as well. Be sponsored.
Lovely segue.
We'll move on. I'm still a bit mad. I still think it's mad that he's gone, to be honest with you. I'm still sort of getting my hand around that, but we shall see. And maybe more people speaking out on this sort of thing is the way forward there. So good on Jeannie, albeit, caused a bit of a storm over the weekend. But sometimes that's no bad thing either. Okay, I'm going to get everyone's thoughts on preseason so far, but just before we do, I'll talk a little bit more about what's coming out this week on Tourplay. It's a great time to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, we feel, as we gear up towards the new season. So on audio and video this week, we've got transfers. Ahoy, as you can imagine. Gutman is in the gutter. I'll be doing some video stuff with Paul Gorse tomorrow, who's the chief LFC writer. Dylan Paleka will be doing little weekly videos that have been going down well, and also our Friday show video is all centered around transfers at the moment as well. Other stuff, we got a really good thing on supporters clubs this out today, which Josh and Harriet worked on. Harriet also done something on women in football. We'll have been involved in it that Amelia hosted, that is out on Wednesday. You've been busy, Harriet. I mean, you're our Jeannie Wijnaldum.
It's been a busy week.
You're our Jeannie Wijnaldum. There's more Football Miracles, which is a show that's been really, really popular, talking about all the wonderful moments which Jeannie Wijnaldum has been involved in, a lot of them that have happened under Jürgen Klopp, which has been a great show to do. I've really enjoyed being involved in. I think it was meant to be three parts. I think now we're looking at a minimum of six. But anyway, and then also on the video side, there's an esports thing out today. It was funny when we did the 2001 stuff, one of the most popular things we did, which you weren't necessarily expecting, was have a game of FIFA from that year. We recreated the 2001 FA Cup final, Josh v Craig, and it went down very well indeed. So we've come up with a bit of an idea around trying to correct games from the past. So if you think about games that you wish Liverpool had won, Josh Sexton's going to try and make that happen on FIFA and going up against various tour contributors.
It's got quite competitive in the office, hasn't it? I'm glad I don't play FIFA, is all I can say.
And also, Stu, I'd say it's not always gone as well as you'd want it to.
Well, that's why I feel like there's a lot of pressure on the show. It's like Quantum Leap. It's like Sam Beckett's one for the kids there.
But he didn't always manage it. We don't always get the happy ending, unfortunately, that we wanted to. But hey, that's life. Okay, we'll just do 10 minutes or so on pre-season so far. Ian, thoughts on what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them, Gibbo, and it's always hard to judge pre-season, but I think there's definitely some kind of shining lights, if you like. So I think, you know, Canate looks like he's settled in pretty well. I think majority of people have been impressed with what they've seen so far. Looks very comfortable on the ball. I mean, he's enormous, and he's a hell of a presence at the back, which is what you want. And I think you're starting to kind of think that it's probably going to be him and Matip first game of the season. The fact that, you know, the other two haven't been involved yet, which is a little bit of a shame, but to be expected. So you're probably going to see that as a combo at Norwich, which feels perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Harvey Elliott is an interesting one. I was saying on the show a few weeks ago, actually, I felt that over a period of time, his natural progression into the team would be to shift him centrally. I didn't see it maybe coming this quick, but Jürgen's chosen to use pre-season to experiment with Harvey. And I think you can understand why, because maybe if you're going to play out wide, or you're going to kind of, you know, play a lot of your career out there, you do feel like pace is king. And if you've got pace, then it doesn't half help you in those wide areas. Now, he's a talented enough boy maybe to have other things to his bow where he maybe doesn't need as much pace. But I can understand why you'd look to shift him centrally. You know, the way to pass, it is a little bit Coutinho-esque at times and stuff. So that's been one where you're wondering, is it just a pre-season thing, or is there maybe more at play? Are they thinking about, well, if he is going to get minutes next season, do we see those minutes where he's coming on and affecting games from a central position? It's one to watch. So they've probably been the kind of standout, Gibbo. I think it's worth mentioning Keita as well, because I think it's hard with Naby, because you're willing him to do well, you're willing him to be available, and you keep coming back to the fact that he's not been able to, you know, the Gini Wijnaldum thing, for instance, you know, he's always available. It's the complete opposite with Naby. You know that there's talent there, but getting him on the pitch has been the problem, and you're kind of almost talking yourself into it a little bit and thinking, well, is this the season? And I mean, I'll be really honest, I can't be hypocritical on this. I probably would have shifted him because of the amount of games he's missed. It was never a question of his quality. If you can get him fit, you know you're going to get a lot of output out of Naby Keita. He's a good footballer, but it has been getting fit. That's been the problem. But, you know, maybe you're doing something slightly different in pre-season with him, where it's going to allow him to stay fit for longer. You don't know yet. But there has been little signs there where you're thinking, well, yeah, he could be a real important figure for Liverpool if they are going to keep hold of him. And you'd have to think they probably are, because you can't imagine there'd be many teams knocking on your door to say, we'll take him, given what's happened in the last three seasons. You know, he's not really been about, has he, in terms of being able to play those minutes and stuff. So I wouldn't see many want to take a chance on him, and you probably wouldn't get the fee that you'd be wanting. So it looks like he's going to be there. So yeah, that's one to watch with interest.
He's a funny one, isn't he, Stu? He's very much the just when I thought I was out, he pulls me back in. It only takes a 10-minute cameo from Naby for me to get me dreaming of what he could potentially do in a Liverpool shirt. Yeah. Guilty as charged.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all guilty, aren't we, really? But I've got a little bit of a thing with Keita that no matter... I don't doubt for a moment that in training, and obviously every now and again in flashes in games, whether it be pre-season or proper season, that we see pure quality. We see someone who does think and move differently. But I always have a little bit of a caveat with Keita is that whenever I've seen him play in the Premier League, I've always thought he can lose the ball too easily and struggle with the recovery back. That's just a nagging issue that I have with him. But I'd love nothing more than, you know, to see him become the number eight that we were hoping he would, you know, we'd signed originally. But yeah, I am enjoying the pre-season, just dipping in and out of it. I'm enjoying the scenery.
Yeah,
I am enjoying the scenery.
Beautiful.
I'm fascinated by how close they are to Hitler's Berghof, you know, mountain retreat. You know, I know it's an alternative take, but it's
I thought you were going to talk about that terrace where they were all getting bevied on, to be honest with you.
No,
you went for Hitler's retreat on Fair Play.
This is how I spend my time, John. That's what interests me. I'm loving the fact as well they've got this extended period of time now together. They've got, because of, you know, the mad circumstances surrounding the world at the moment, that Klopp has got the pre-season that he's always wanted in many respects, you know, and I'm really, really optimistic about that. And I think players have looked quite sharp. You know, Keita's been spoken about, but I thought Mane and Salah looked pretty sharp.
It's
just
nice to have them about, isn't it,
it's lovely to have them so early. And I also think I've been really pleased that Tsimikas is actually getting a little bit of credit online.
See Fabinho bigging him up as well on
Insta.
That was good, wasn't it?
I did, and I think he was very, very... I thought this at the time, to be honest, but there were more important issues going on. But I felt like he was unfair last season how far he was criticised, because he barely got a kick, and the manager was very, very clear about why he barely got a kick. There was no reference to him being a poor trainer or not being up to scratch. It was just that, you know, we had a back four that had been completely and utterly decimated, so why change another player? So I think Klopp has reassured Tsimikas last season that he would get more game time. Listen, you know, dare I say it, I don't want to put the mockers on him now, but I actually see a little bit of a left-sided Finnan.
What are you going to say? He's like a new signing. That was what you were going to. You goaded yourself into saying.
There is that too, but I do just the way he moves, the way he plays the game, the way he passes the ball, his instincts. These just remind me of certain characteristics of Finnan. I'm not saying he's in that class yet, but I think, you know, I'm excited to see him giving a fair crack of the whip this season. But I'm hoping that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the centre forward position. Is that something we can
dive in, mate? Feel free.
Really?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, excellent. The Ox thing, the Ox positional into the false nine, that experiment. I was cautiously optimistic, because I think he did a 20-minute cameo in the position last season. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who against. I got a feeling it might be Burnley. But I remember at the time thinking, he looked dead bright. That was a really interesting little cameo, that in that position. But I actually think the problem with him there also equates in a really mad way to a problem if we were to buy a 30-goal-a-season striker there. If we were to buy someone who was, in an effect, an Andy Cole, if you like, someone who was a finisher. And there's a lot of people crying out for us to sign someone like that in that position. I think structurally it has a huge impact on the team, because when Bobby Firmino doesn't play, I'm not sitting there at the game thinking... I'm not thinking about the goals that he's not scoring. I'm thinking about everything in front of me constantly breaking down, because we've got no one. When we play a proper striker there, like an Origi, where there's no one who holds the ball up. We need someone. Our first and foremost characteristic when we are looking to recruit for that position. So we should be someone who is good with their feet but can hold the ball up with their back to goal. Doesn't need to, Bobby's proved that, doesn't need to be a 6'2" Alehouse player. That can be a really good technical player who's strong and who's got a game intelligence. But Bobby can occupy a back four. He can have his back to goal, hold the ball up and link the play, and basically be Liverpool's fulcrum. Without him, or without a player of that style and capability to do that, Mane and Salah are not half the players that they're capable of being. So if Liverpool's intention is still in the next 3 or 4 years to have a path, have a plan that's based around Mane and Salah, then they have got to make sure that they've got a fulcrum at centre forward. That's my issue if we buy an out-and-out striker. Are they going to have the technical skills to do what I've just said? If they can, brilliant. If we can get one who can score loads of goals but can also be the fulcrum, fantastic. My issue with Ox is that I don't think he has got it in his locker. Certainly, there's not enough seen of it for him to occupy a back four and play with his back to goal at times and bring others into play, because he's just not been brought through as a player like that. And what is he now? What, 28?
I think he's a bit younger.
But he's certainly in his prime now, isn't he? And his entire career, he's not played in that position. So he's not learned those basics from when he was a kid, as a young player, and then as a senior pro, of how to do that job. So until we can solve that equation or teach him how to do that, then I'm very much in the camp of we need someone else.
Okay, he's 27, but 28 in 3 weeks.
I feel like
in a way we were all right.
Let's not get into that. he's
not finished. Harriet, feel free to talk about that or anything else that has caught your eye over these pre-season games.
Yeah, I've enjoyed watching pre-season, actually. I think it's interesting because we're playing a slightly higher calibre of team than we normally play in pre-season, so we're getting to see a little bit more of...
Certainly at this stage. Yeah,
exactly, at this stage pre-season. So it's been quite good, but... Yeah, I don't know. I just like Ox as a person, so I'm never going to... But I do agree. I don't think he's got what it takes to, you know, be at any sort of good backup to the Firmino role and playing that false nine position. I think it's nice, though. I think when Harvey Elliott was dropped into midfield and Ox was playing that false nine, I did like that they were kind of interchanging that role, and I thought that was quite interesting. Don't know if that's something, as a backup when the season starts, that they could do. Big fan of Konate, just running through... I mean, I liked him before he even started. The fact that he just had, like, parties with his... face on bottles and everything. It was just a bit mad, wasn't it? So now that he's on the pitch, I think he's just got a really positive attitude. His pace is really impressive. I think mm-hmm. I knew he'd be a player, but I didn't sort of know quite how good he'd actually be and the backup that he can provide. And I feel quite comfortable going into the start of the season with him and Matip as centre-backs. I know what you guys think, but I feel like obviously we know Matip's injury problems that he's had, and we know that he's not going to be able to play twice a week. And when that starts to come along, obviously, hopefully we'll have Van Dijk and Gomez back anyway. But I've been impressed with that, and I think they've got quite a good partnership. And yeah, I'm enjoying watching them. Harvey Elliott, like Ian already said, I think he's been really great to watch. And I was always about, you know, a couple of months ago, I was saying I thought he needed another loan spell. But now that I've seen him a little bit in pre-season in that slight tactical shift and in a different role, I think that he actually does have a role to play at Liverpool next season. I don't think he'll be a starter. I don't think anyone expects him to come in and be a starter. But off the bench last season, I think we were missing creative midfielders coming off the bench and making an impact in the game. And I think that's a role that Harvey Elliott can play really well. So I've enjoyed it. I'm just trying to watch it and not take it all too seriously, because I think I read an article and it was like, you know, pre-season's not really reflective of what's going to happen in the season. We all know that. But it's just a chance for the players to get warmed up, and it's nice to see them all back around. It's nice to see Virg having a nice time in the mountains, and that's all you really want at this stage, isn't it?
One thing you would say, Gibbo, is that I think Liverpool's pre-season will be the envy of lots of other teams.
100%.
When you see some of the kind of car crashes that other teams are having in terms of being able to just get games and stuff, and they look well behind the curve in terms of where you want to be right now. So I think the manager will be delighted in that respect. You mentioned there, you know, it's good to have the likes of a Mane and Salah already in before this stage where, you know, normally you're expecting them back quite late. Same goes for lots of other players. You know, Trent didn't go to the Euros. Massive tip in the box for that one as well. You know, Robertson's just come back. So there's loads of pluses for Liverpool in terms of this pre-season. And obviously, we've got the games at Anfield as well coming up in early August. I think Stu's point around Chamberlain, I totally agree with. It doesn't feel like it's got legs for me. I don't think I'd want to be seeing that as a solution to a problem for Liverpool up top. I think the Bobby Firmino thing, it's hard to know what is... his level's going to be next season, because I think he has gone through this period of time where it's been maybe 18 months where he's not quite been at the level you've seen previously. That's not to say he's not been still contributing. We know he has. You think about Old Trafford, there's still been big moments for Bobby, but you just wonder whether his very, very best is slightly behind him. You've also got to factor in the fact that, you know, some of these players have really missed the crowd, and I know that's an easy thing to say, but I think with some of them, you can just tell it. It makes such a difference when they're playing in front of a full crowd or a crowd. And that's just, that's not to say they should use that as an excuse, because it is what it is for everyone, but you can see it's a difference maker to some of them. So I watch with interest, really, with Firmino, whether he can get back to maybe, you know, 2 years ago where he was just simply, you know, one of the best number nines out there. You know, he had the goals, he had all the other stuff that Stu's just mentioned as well. It is hard to kind of, you know, find a replacement, but I think Liverpool do need to have another solution up top. You know, Mohamed Salah, if he doesn't score, there was a problem last season where you're thinking, well, where are the goals coming from? You know, same thing applies to Mane. I love Sadio Mane, he's been brilliant for this club, but again, last season you're a little bit worried about where he is. But you know, he's making noises already to say, I know that wasn't my best season, but I'm fully, fully confident I can find my form of maybe, again, 18 months, 2 years ago. So there's a lot of interest with that front three, but, and I know Harvey's been mentioned as an option. I don't really see that as being an option. I do like the fact that they are thinking about, you know, centrally with him, but I think it's something that Liverpool need to be thinking about. You know, is there someone out there who can do a little bit of what Stu mentioned there? You know, he can chip in with goals, and at the same time, he can facilitate the two wide players. Or is it a case of, you know, Mohamed Salah's going to do more through the middle? He's certainly more than capable. You know, we've seen Mane do little bits through the middle as well. Again, he's looked more than capable. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting one.
We shall see. There'll be another piece of the puzzle on Thursday night, Liverpool play. And we're doing it on Hot Mic, so come and join it with us. The app is completely free on your phone. Just download it. Use the code AnfieldRap when you download the app, and you can watch the friendly along with us. Obviously, they're all on LFC TV, and Steve Hunter does a great job. But if you want someone definitely drunker, then me and Kev will be on Thursday night. I've even got a bit of Phil Blundell, actually, to add a bit of sense to the scenes. So, yeah, do come and join us on Thursday, where we're all going to watch Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain score a brace and ram Stu right where Stan's throat. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Stu, thanks to Harriet, thanks to Ian, and yeah, that's been the Anfield Wrap. theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe if you want much, much more, including loads of transfers. But in the meantime, up the Reds, and see you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.